Hi, welcome to the Learning for Life podcast.
Today's episode, Crime Does Pay. According to the Guardian newspaper, it's no mystery that crime is the biggest selling genre in books. I speak with Sherry Sullivan, who along with her fellow CLR instructors, present the course, Our Favorite Detective. In our second segment, I speak with Bernard Schaefer, best-selling author of police thrillers. Hi, Sherry. Welcome to Learning for Life.
Hi, Sarah. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, this is
class for other people who each are doing their own favorite detective for our class.
Why do people like detective mystery novels?
There were some characteristics, I said, of people who like crime novels. And one, they're intelligent, which we know. Well, everyone at CLR
and anyone who's listening to this, obviously, is highly intelligent. Yes, go on.
They have a sense of curiosity.
Right.
They enjoy action. They like to analyze things. Sometimes they're puzzle solvers, too, like crossword puzzles. And they have an interest in how did it happen, why did it happen, and who did it. A lot of people like to have something that does have a conclusion. They said they want to see sometimes that if there's disorder going on, the detective or the policeman or the private eye puts some order back into things. That if there's chaos, they settle it. If there's a wrong in society, they seem to try and find a way to make it right or smooth it over.
It makes it sound like a very comforting type of book to get into.
I think so. Some are more so than others. That's why they call some of them cozy and some of them are true murder mysteries.
Okay. So what can you think of an example of a cozy mystery?
Anything that deals with caterers and cupcakes. Or the English countryside. That's what they call cozy mysteries.
So is that on the New York Times review of books? They have the cupcake list of the top 10 cupcake books for
Well, my last class was called Murder on the Menu, and I said we are not doing any on the lady who makes the cupcakes.
Okay.
Or Goldie the caterer out in Denver, right. Because they're just a little too sweet. I mean, and not just in the cupcake taste, but we wanted to do something that had a little bit more depth to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're usually very light reads. So we'll read them over the summer or maybe at Christmas time. But, if it's the winter, you kind of want a murder mystery.
So this is really interesting. So I've never thought of it this way. But so your selection of books as a mystery reader is tied to the seasons.
It can be.
So just like you would change your clothing for the different times of year, you might also change the novels that you might explore in
That's
a given
right.
season.
Right.
So who's a good wintertime read, in your opinion?
You mean for a light, cozy read?
What would you do in the winter? Would it be a light, cozy read?
Well, around the holidays, we try to find something lighter to read mm-hmm. in my mystery book club. I'm not sure exactly where. Oh, we'll be finished up before the holidays
okay.
with this particular
class. But in general,
class.
Yeah.
What we read last time, I think we read somebody called Rhys Bowen, who was an English person, and she actually has a princess or a countess or whatever who's the detective or the amateur detective. Most people would consider Agatha Christie to be, cozy novels mm-hmm. out in the English countryside. So they might be a lighter read that you would happen to have. Or you might just want to read something funny like Janet Ivanovich, who's in Trenton and just gets herself involved in all sorts of funny sorts of situations.
Interesting. Now, what would be an example of an edgy, suspenseful read?
Well, there was an author called Thomas Perry, and he's the first one I read when I joined this mystery book club a couple years ago. And he has a character called the Butcher Boy.
Oh my God.
No. And let me tell you, that is not a pleasant situation.
And I take it
was fascinating.
He's not making hoagies. I mean, he's called the Butcher Boy for another reason.
He does things with knives that you don't want to know about.
Okay.
So, now that would be something that if you want to just get involved in something that way, it would be a much darker one. And a book we actually read in an earlier class was called One Night in Winter, which was set in Stalinist Russia. And that was fascinating, but it was dark.
There's a really exciting event that's going to be taking place here in Bucks County in October 12th to the 13th. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It is the second annual Bucks County Book Fest. We hope we will have many more after this. It's a two-day event in which over 50 published authors are going to be coming to Doylestown for 2 days. Saturday is at the Firehouse, and it's a kids' book festival day where they're all children's authors up to probably about the age of 12 who will be reading from their books, doing little shows, talking about their books and what's happening there. Saturday night, Anna Quinlan is our keynote speaker.
That's amazing.
And on Sunday, it's mainly Adults Day, and some YA, some young adult authors are going to be there, where we're going to have three tents that are going to have rotating panels of authors in different areas. I think we're going to have somebody talking about cookbooks, and we're going to have a mystery and suspense panel. So I'm hoping to go to the mystery and suspense panel because there'll be three authors there who I don't know.
And there's a mystery panel. Did they have one last year?
Not that I recall.
Okay, so maybe it's new this year, but it sounds like it really dovetails nicely with your course. Were you able to look at who some of the authors are and what looks really particularly interesting to you?
Well, there is one author. His name's Bernard Schaefer. I don't know him. I haven't read him before, but he's a police detective from the Philadelphia area, and I think he would probably be someone I'd be interested in reading because he probably writes about the perspective of someone who's been in the business writing mystery novels about it.
Our thanks to Sherry Sullivan for speaking with us about her course and the Doylestown Book Fest. In our next segment, I catch up with Bernard Schaefer prior to his appearance at the Bucks County Book Fest. Bernard is a 20-year veteran of law enforcement and a popular writer of police thrillers. Bernard Schaefer, welcome to Learning for Life.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
And this is a thrill for me because I enjoyed reading The Thief of All Light. And I found the book gritty and intense and just a very exciting thriller. And if I can borrow a quote from Lisa Scodellini, she said it's the most engaging pair of detectives that she's seen in a long time. And, I want to ask you to speak a little bit about Carrie. How do you pronounce the heroine's last name?
Santero.
Santero?
Yeah.
Can you describe Carrie Santero, the rookie cop that you have featured in the book?
Sure. Well, when we meet her in the first book, she is a young female police officer. And the way that I envision her is she kind of has stars in her eyes in reference to criminal investigations. She wants to be a detective. She wants to handle the big cases. In her mind, you know, the worse, the better. You know, she's entranced with the idea of being a detective when it starts. And, you know, through the events in the book, when she actually has to experience, you know, some real evil firsthand. By the end of the book, you know, she's a changed person, just as anyone would be when they're exposed to that.
And how do we first meet her?
Let's see if I can remember. I believe when we first meet her, like I said, she's
a
young
female
police officer. Yeah, she's she's not a rookie, but she's very new on the job. She's only been there a couple of years. And she's just inexperienced, but she's very eager.
And she has a partner that is introduced in that first book.
Yeah, so they don't start off as partners. A big portion of the first book is almost like they have to go find Jacob Rain. Jacob Rain is a former police officer. He's living in exile in disgrace for some bad turns that his life took as a result of, you know, spending his career dealing with these kind of monsters. In other words, what the thing that Carrie longs to be, Jacob was, and it ruined him. So when she shows up, because when they're dealing with this Omni killer, they realize they are in way over their head, way out of their depth. And probably Jacob Rain is the only person in that region who has even a chance of figuring this situation out and helping them. And then there's some dire circumstances because the Omni killer has taken someone very close to Carrie. So she has to go find this guy, Jacob, and kind of try to bring him back into the fold. You know, and one of the themes of the first book is redemption. Can you find redemption after, you know, your whole life's been destroyed and you've lost everything that you are and everything that you had? Will the qualities that a person has still be able to give them a way back.
It's interesting because it almost sounds to me like the book is Jacob's story as much as it is Carrie's story.
That's the idea. I've always felt that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said, what's the fascination with serial killers?
For writers or for readers?
Both.
So I would say for writers, it's it's your turn to take a crack at that specific type of literature. You know, everybody takes a swing at it. You know, it's one of those things where, okay, it's the serial killer's out there. What's he doing? What's he look like? What's his method? How crazy is he? What's his thing? And you get to invent this entire monstrous, supervillain that, many other authors have done before. And it's your turn to kind of take a crack at it. So that's what's interesting about it for authors. For readers, I think there's a lot of psychology involved. It plays on, their fear. It's a way to, I think with all horror or with all thriller books for readers, it is a way for them to peer into the darkness without really having to touch it.
Because as a society, we're fascinated by serial killers. Even
sure.
In the media, we're fascinated by them.
Yeah, we always have been. I mean, ever since the arrival of, I think what we could say is the first superstar serial killer in Jack the Ripper, one of the reasons what happened is because newspapers all over the world were fascinated by it and covered it, and Jack began sending them letters, interacting with the media. So it's for whatever reason, it's a human phenomenon. It's not just a more recent one. It's been that way for a long time.
The Thief of All Light introduces the detective pair of Santero and, is it Rain is the last name?
Yes.
Rain? Okay. And you continue their development in your next book, which is The Unsettled Grave.
Yes.
What could readers expect in that book, which is the follow-up?
So, the main idea with each installment of the Santero and Rain thriller series is that they stand on their own. So you can pick up An Unsettled Grave without having read The Thief of All Light and still have a complete experience. Obviously, you'll get more out of it if you've read the first one, because it's just a deeper understanding of what's going on. And the other thing that my intention with each book is to improve with each book that I write, not just for that series, but I've always spent my writing career attempting to do that. So I really, really enjoy An Unsettled Grave. It deals a lot with some of Jacob's backstory, showing you how he became the investigative genius that we meet in the first book, providing a lot of a backstory. It also gives Carrie the opportunity to stand on her own as a detective. She has come into her own in that book and no longer really needs Jacob, dictating to her. And as a matter of fact, Jacob kind of pushes her away by refusing to help her. And we get the chance to see her kind of stand on her own as a investigator. And another theme with the book, that it was on my mind a lot while I was writing it, the Me Too movement had really started to come about, and a lot of information was being disclosed. And, that was meaningful to me because I've spent my career as a police detective dealing a lot with female victims, whether they were children or whether they were adults or whether they were older, just the victims and witnesses and seeing how brave they are and having to go through the court process and the healing process, or sometimes being killed. And a big theme in the book is how society deals with women, and also how it also victimizes them. And there's some, there's some pretty significant victimization of women in the book. None of it's exploitational, mm-hmm. that word, but it has a resolution that I think I needed to experience as a writer.
This sensitivity that you have towards the female characters, I'm curious, is there anyone in your life, whether it be your wife or your mom or an aunt, grandmom, is there anyone who gave you that special sensitivity?
I'm not married. I've been divorced for about 10 years. I'm a single dad. I have a daughter, and she's first and foremost, she's the love of my life. My son is too. But in terms of specific, feeling towards women, growing up, my mom is the one who took me to, all the used bookstores in the area, and one of my aunts was my very first editor and encouraged me to be a writer and would always, you know, she was a very astute reader and we would have long discussions about literature. So, I mean, I've always been very influenced by women and had them in my life. And, you know, definitely my career has made me more sensitive to those issues as well.
Can you tell us a little bit of what it's like to be a detective? How much of the job involves actually solving a crime, figuring out the whodunit?
Whodunits are really rare. Whodunits are really rare in life. There are, you know, in other words, you're in much, much greater danger from the people around you than you are from a stranger, you know, in an alleyway. That's just reality. That, you know, I wouldn't know the percentage, but the majority of people who are victimized, killed, assaulted, whatever, however you want to say, in this country at least, it's done by people that are, that live with them, are intimate partners with them, or know them. It's very,
so you
very
would say
rare.
That cold cases are rare.
Cold cases are extremely rare.
But yet it's interesting because I think they make up the bulk of, you know, the TV shows that we see and
sure.
also a lot of the novels.
So the other thing that you have to understand as well is, this is going to be tricky for me to describe because I'm actually going to trial with a cold case homicide in a little while. So law enforcement and criminal investigations have progressed well beyond what they were doing back in the 80s, even in the 90s. The focus, the forensics, the capabilities, and the skill of detectives today and federal investigators today is so far beyond what they had in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and at any other point in history. And unfortunately, the only way that you get all of that is through experience. It's only progressed because so many things have happened. But for a lot of the cold cases that are being worked right now, it's because, and no offense to anybody, the people that did them initially had no idea what they were doing.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And maybe not necessarily had no idea what they were doing because they were bums, but because they just did not have the resources, the training, the capability to understand what they were seeing or what they were supposed to be doing. You know, and I think that's the main difference in terms of the type of law enforcement that detectives do. Mm-hmm. They really focus on charging someone criminally in the court, carrying it and having the investigation be able to withstand going through, you know, preliminary hearings, suppression hearings, and a jury trial, and still remaining solid enough to receive a conviction.
Now, I'm wondering, do you use the factual details and from actual cases, do they make their way into your own work?
No, I don't write about anything that I have experienced with work. I think the difference would be, and let me back up just a second. I'm actually a writer who became a police officer. I'm not a police officer who became a writer. I think one of the distinctions for me, you know, certainly from the cops that I've met, almost every cop that you talk to has the idea that they want to write a book. You know, I'm going to write a book someday, but it's always going to be the same thing. It's always going to be about their experiences, their views on humanity. They're going to tell you the inside story on police work and blah, blah, blah. That's not me. I'm a novelist and an author of fiction. Now, the difference is more along the lines of like Hemingway's iceberg theory. You're seeing the top of the iceberg in the story, but underneath it, the fundamentals are sound. I know exactly what my cops are doing. I know why they're doing it. I know if they're doing something wrong. And you know, there are some popular authors out there who are very successful and they write great books, but they do things that I sit there and I bang my head against the wall because it's just not true. It's just not possible.
So it's interesting that you started out as a writer who became a cop.
Yes.
So that's interesting because I had a list of these questions that had to do with police work. And now I'm really interested in seeing what your response would be. So I know a lot of people who work in law enforcement, they refer to it as a brotherhood. What do you think that means? What do you think they mean when they talk about that?
I don't know what they mean when they talk about that. I don't see it as a brotherhood. I think that's kind of a myth, maybe a self-perpetuating myth.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's a comfortable delusion, but it's really not a brotherhood.
Because
what
I was...
Go ahead.
No, I was thinking about reading your book, The Way of the Warrior, which
yes.
actually, if I understand, that is used to help train people in law enforcement. I was just wondering if any of that touches upon that.
No, not really. Surprisingly, I get emails from people that say it's being used in police academies and being taught in universities. And every once in a while, I get these really complicated, you know, collegiate type questions about something in the book. And I think, I have no idea how to answer that. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. I just wrote it, you know, based on my experiences and my thoughts.
Do you have a thought about what makes a good detective?
Many thoughts about what makes a good detective. But I wanted to answer first as far as the brotherhood goes. I think that law enforcement as a whole can be insular, and it can be a pack mentality, which comes from like an us versus them type of viewpoint. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that causes that is you have to understand when you're in a uniform or you're in a patrol car that's marked and identifiable, you will encounter people. Let's say you just walk out your door, you're minding your own business, you have nothing but good intentions. You will encounter people that hate you, want to kill you, want to spit on you and scream at you and punch you and dehumanize you on sight. You've never met them. You have no idea who they are. You have no bad feelings towards them. They hate you. And it's a hard mentality to sustain for 25 or 30 years. And it causes cops to withdraw, and it causes them to band together, because it's hard to explain to other people things that you've seen or done or gone through or experienced, who just have no concept of what that even means. So there's people in my family, right, who they might think I'm paranoid. They might think I'm overly protective of my kids. They might think that I'm, you know, unfriendly. They might, like, if someone comes to the door, if I'm at their house and someone comes to their door to try to sell them a new energy supplier, mm-hmm. I'm immediately thinking there's also someone coming around the back trying to break into the house, because I've dealt with that many times where they attack you in the front and they break in the back. So I'm telling these people, beat it. We don't want it. Don't come back to this house, because I'm telling them you're not going to victimize the people here. But my family members are like, why are you so mean to those people? What's your problem? Why do you suspect everybody's up to something bad? That type of thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you've seen a side of life that they haven't seen.
And
so
can't
you
even
know
comprehend.
Stuff that they don't know.
Right. Can't even comprehend. And it's not just them, and it's not just me, but, you know, anytime, give me an example. Anytime something goes wrong in the world, in a neighborhood, anytime there's a news segment where bodies have been found buried in someone's basement or backyard, and they interview the neighbors. The neighbors every single time say, one, I never would have thought that's not this kind of neighborhood. Or two, you know, you don't think this kind of thing is going to happen around here. And the reason everybody says that is no one thinks that kind of thing is going to happen around here. Anywhere. Doesn't matter where you are.
What does it take to make a good detective? I don't know if you got a chance to answer that. I'm just curious. Is there a right stuff for somebody who's a good detective?
I think so. I think a good detective has to be first and foremost a critical thinker. The having the scientific mindset of establishing evidence, not leaping to conclusions, following a natural progressive investigative path where you're developing suspects organic, and not walking into a scene and saying, I bet it was so-and-so, let's fit the entire investigation to match my theory. That's the difference between a good and a bad detective. A good detective is constantly evaluating, you know, what he's doing, and is the case being moved properly toward, you know, establishing criminal charges. But also, there's a good detective has empathy, because empathy is one of the key components that you need to be a successful interviewer and interrogator. Empathy will carry you far when you're speaking with victims. Empathy will carry you far when you're speaking with witnesses. Some of the best detectives that I know are incredibly friendly and incredibly polite to the people that they deal with, good and bad.
Well, Bernard, I want to thank you so much for talking with us. And I do want to mention to people that you will be at the Bucks County Book Fest in Doylestown. And
yes,
you're going to be participating in an author panel, mystery suspense author panel. And that's going to be on Sunday, October 13th. And if people are interested, they should log into bucksbookfest.org. And I, for one, will also make my way there. And I would love to meet you in person, because you sound like a fascinating human being.
Oh, and, thank you so much.
Thank you. And hopefully we'll bring a number of people from our mystery class who would also be interested in meeting you. And again, thank you so much for your time. This is really enjoyable and interesting.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for having me. And I hope to see everybody at the Book Fest.
Thanks for listening to Learning for Life. I'm Sarah Shane. I wrote and produced this podcast, editing and original music by Larry Lefkowitz. Let us know what you think by going to the Delaware Valley University CLR website. Click on Request Information. We look forward to hearing from you. The opinions expressed in Learning for Life do not reflect those of Delaware Valley University CLR.